You can hear our show on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, J.D., joined by my full crew, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Nicole Hale. Welcome, gang.
Hello.
So this week, it is Fanboy Versus the Apology, as Chris McFeely eats crow about More Than Meets the Eye, in particular the art.
Let's not go crazy, no. We're going to get there later. When you say apology, you toss it nodding of the head, maybe.
I don't even remember what you said, so we can just embarrass you more. Just go ahead and just say it again. And...
Right. Something about... fear and boxes and things. I don't know. Anyway, so that'll be later. We'll talk about More Than Meets the Eye later. We're going to review lots of cool stuff. Batman, More Than Meets the Eye, Daredevil's coming up. Amazing Spider-Man Point One. So all that
stuff.
The old
sound bites.
And Road Rage.
Yeah.
Nicole is very excited about that. She was talking about
it
last week.
I'm a sucker for the man who writes it, so. Anything with his name on it, I'll buy.
Very good.
Road Rage makes me think it's a car combat game like Twisted Metal or something.
Well, with the recent stuff with Shattered Glass and Trax, all I can think about is that. So it's like I just keep thinking, you know, Red Trax. But anyway. So Chris McFeely, we were talking and you said you wanted to talk something about...
Well, there's some news.
Some news.
Yeah, so there's a few bits of news. So okay. Yeah, we'll start with the sad news. Sad news is that Hall of Fame artist John Severin passed away this week at the age of 90. So he had a good long run. One of the great EC artists from back in the day. If his name sounds familiar, it's quite possible you're thinking of his sister Marie, who was a colorist for Marvel. He was well known for his Western series and his Barbarian comics. Cull was his at Marvel. And he wrote and drew for Cracked magazine as well. He worked on Marvel's Rawhide Kid in 2003, the controversial gay one. And he's worked on Punisher and BPRD in the last couple of years. And he passed away this week.
Wow.
So, yeah. You know, it's a loss, but he had a good long run, and he's justly remembered. Speaking of, the complete flip side of the coin, which is characters who, creators who had a good run and have fallen into trouble in the last couple of years, we got to go back and talk about Gary Friedrich and his case with Ghost Rider last week. We had an extended discussion, good discussion, about the legalities of that. And I just want to clarify a point that I made, which I actually made an error, which was regarding the $17,000 payment and the fact that Gary can't claim himself to be the creator anymore. I said that was the settlement. I was wrong about that. That was not the settlement, but that was the agreement that both parties had come to, which would be the penalty if Gary lost, so that the litigation again for his copyright infringement would not go on to a higher court, which is why he is appealing it. It was not a settlement reached out of court. It was an agreement that the parties came to prior to the case. If you lose, this is what will happen.
Ah, I gotcha.
I just want to clarify that because I want to try and get all
more
the,
sense.
The right. Yeah, because it's like, but the fact is he still agreed to, for that to be the losing condition. We were also talking in the midst of that about the fears that, well, frankly, what I think we both agreed were scaremongering about... creators at conventions doing Marvel sue them for doing drawings and what have you, and Joe Quesada and Dan Buckley came out to talk a little bit about this on CBR this week, and I'm just going to quote I'm going to quote them here. Quesada said, "Let me put this as simply as I can. Marvel is not looking to make any new policy announcement through this lawsuit." And Buckley said, "We in no way want to interfere with creators at conventions who are providing a positive Marvel experience for our fans, part of that interaction being that a fan can walk away with a signed memento or a personalized sketch." So they are not looking to change anything there. There's some alarmist talk that they might, but this lawsuit really means nothing in that regard.
Do you think it was more about some of the, you know, artists trying to put pressure back onto Marvel, saying, "Hey, we're not gonna, you know, endorse your stuff in this way because you've done this to one of our own"?
I didn't see any artists doing that, but you said that there was somebody who did that.
Yeah, and of course I don't have the information right in front of me, but there was one artist. There was a big deal about, I think he posted on his DeviantArt this week, that you know, he was no longer going to provide, you know, images and or do drawings and things at cons, you know, for fear that of future litigation, because this case has just opened that up. And you know, of course, and I think some of that was in particular why, you know, Joe responded and others have responded, and even like Dan Slott had an extended response even on his Twitter this week about it. So there's been a lot of chiming in one way or the other this week. But it does seem
it's
to be
definitely
that...
said tongues wagging. We actually saw a sample of some of the things Gary Friedrich, one of the things Gary Friedrich was selling, which was a script page. Well, you know, it presented itself as a page of script for Ghost Rider number one by him, and it had several of Mike Ploog's Ghost Rider drawings on it, you know, but it wasn't, for starters, it wasn't a reproduction because it had been retyped with modern technology. B, it probably wasn't a script anyway because this was the 1970s, so everything was done Marvel style where he sent him an outline and then the art came back and then he dialogued it, so there wouldn't have been a full script to reproduce. And it said at the bottom of the script, "Copyright Gary Friedrich, C symbol, date," you know, and it's like, lies!
Yeah, that's not even... Nothing about that really adds up.
Never mind if you claim creatorship or not. You can't do that. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point here is that there's a lot of things that he was doing that weren't right. Whether or not he was doing it out of a way to try to feed himself, you know, and whether or not he felt ripped off, that still doesn't give you the right to do that without, you know, going through the due process to do that. And, you know, so I think it is a bit of the, you know, some of the other creators overreacting to this. So I don't know. I'm not worried. This will all blow over in a year, you know. So in a year,
I don't know. It's taken 5 years to get this far.
Right, but I'm saying like this particular bit of the news, you know, in 6 months to a year, considering the news cycle and everything,
will blow over next Friday.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm kind of surprised that it's not over yet, because it seemed like it was big there for like the day, and then boom, it kind of slowed down, and now we've heard a little bit more.
I think it's because that person, I wish I had the name right in front of me, but they, because of that announcement earlier in the week, it like stirred it all back up again. So yeah. I think as provided nothing stirs the pot again, I think it'll quietly go away. So.
Well, speaking of Ghost Rider, there isn't really any other news. There haven't been any major new announcements or anything this week. But something that did happen was the Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance came out. Now, everybody raise your hands if you saw it.
Oh, wait.
I'm
no.
broke, or honestly, I would have.
You had even plans. Would you want to go spend your money on something you know you're going to hate?
I didn't mind the first movie. I thought it was
okay.
See,
I didn't mind the first one either. I know a lot of hate was thrown on it, but like Daredevil, Mark Steven Johnson, same guy did it. There's a lot of Ghost Rider lore chopped and blended into that first film. It comes from a place of love, even if the end result was
I remotely liked the first one is because Sam Elliott was in it.
Dude, yeah, Sam Elliott Ghost Rider on a horse. That's all you got to say.
Awesome. That was awesome.
Sam Elliott's character is a mixture of the Marvel Western Ghost Rider, Carter Slade, who is not like a Ghost Rider Flaming Skull Ghost Rider, but just a cowboy who dressed all in white and was just the first character to be called Ghost Rider, completely unrelated. And the character of Caretaker from the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider comics whirled together and turned into a flaming skeleton horseman. And that was this new thing. You know, that's what I'm talking about. There's a lore mixed and blended and whipped and stirred in there to make that film. Hellfire Shotgun, Black Harpyon, you know, Johnny's there, and the whole origin and everything. Well, Spirit of Vengeance is terrible shit.
Wait, was Sam Elliott in it, though?
Sam Elliott was not in it, but Idris Elba was in it.
I have to watch it.
Idris Elba was in it, and he's good. But I think he needs some little guy to follow him around and go, Idris, no, not that one, no. Just to stop him from picking these roles that he seems to wind up in infrequently. You know, he was Heimdall in Thor, and he had a big role in The Wire as well. You know, and he's great, but he plays, what's the character's name? Moreau, who is like a French warrior priest who is on a mission from God.
So far you got me, French warrior priest.
Yeah, well, I should say, wine swilling as well, loves the wine. But he is doing the accent, so when it comes to the he is the spirit of vengeance. That is actually how he pronounced it.
Oh no!
Wow, it is bad.
If I could get into a matinee, I might watch this just so I could laugh.
I mean, now this is by the directors of Crank, so you really have to understand what you're getting into with that. It is loud, stupid, unhalting, noise, spastic insanity. It's set in the nice nebulous land of Eastern Europe, but I think they were a little bit too far to the east for there to be that many Dutch angles in the damn film.
Ow.
Blackout is, well, okay, so the plot of the thing is, Johnny Blaze is in hiding, trying to contain the beast within him, because they're still doing that thing from the first movie where the Ghost Rider is an uncontrollable force that takes over him, and little more than an animal. He's trying to contain it, and he is approached by Idris Elba's character with a mission to save a child who is the progeny of the devil. This is the boy Danny. Now, he's never named Danny Ketch, but you don't
pick. Yeah, I saw that in the preview and I was like, ooh,
the name Danny, you don't pick that by coincidence, you know, you don't pick that by coincidence. So anyway, he's the spawn of the devil with a human woman who the devil wishes to use as a new host body on Earth, who will have all the ability to use all the powers at his command, whereas the bodies he currently inhabits burn themselves out.
Now, by devil,
I mean, well, you know, they just call him the devil or Rourke, you know. And the way in the first film, they called him Mephistopheles,
right?
Because frankly, I don't have no problems with that. I mean, there's no point burdening down the simplicity of the concept with the finickiness of finicky Marvelness of who and what the devil is, you know.
Okay.
So Johnny saves the kid, and it's road trip across Eastern Europe to get him to a place of safety. Where he is promised, Rourke promises him that they will lift his curse and free him from Zarathos. And they call it Zarathos in this film, and they do the little story about how he is actually from Daniel Wiser, and how he is an angel, and how he fell from heaven and was driven insane in hell, and then the devil captured him and used him to torment poor souls and by bonding him to them. That sort of stuff's all in there. So this is all pretty straightforward, you know, solid enough. So, and of course, it's the obligatory Hulk scenario where he is freed of Zarathos, but then the devil gets the boy, so he has to accept it as part of him. And go and save him. You know, it's pretty straightforward stuff. But it's just unhaltingly atrocious. But not, like in an entertaining way. I went in on the understanding that this would be pretty terrible, so I didn't come out annoyed or anything. I admit it was probably a little worse than I thought it was going to be. And this is coming from somebody who thought the first movie, as I say, was serviceable and a lot of blended Ghost Rider lore. My boss, like I had said to him a couple of days beforehand, oh, it would be terrible but perfectly entertaining. And he was like, what are you talking about? The good Ghost Rider. Do you not have hopes? And I was like, you are approaching this with the wrong head, sir. the day after he'd seen it, but I hadn't seen it yet, I said to him, did you see Ghost Rider? And he said, I did. Well, that's not the voice that's
worst. Admit to it.
Well, that's not a voice that's bursting with joy. And he said, you haven't seen it yet. I don't want to ruin it for you.
Ruin it. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I think when you watch the trailer and there's flaming urine, you know, you kind of know that you're going to be.
That is not like in the narrative of the film. That is a joke the Nicolas Cage tails the kid. That's just that's all that. That's just a joke.
It's like a Michael Bay joke. It just fails.
it's actually the setup for a punchline that comes a little bit later. It's by far from the worst thing in film.
Oh, good.
The devil sets on their trail. Blackout. Triple. You'll probably remember Blackout from Danny Ketch's run. It's just his name and physical appearance, and nothing to do with the actual character from the comics at all. Yeah,
wow.
he has the power to suck the life out of things. And you're just sitting there watching it, and then you suddenly Christopher Lambert comes striding into the film, completely tattooed as a monk, and I'm like, I'm just leaning over to the guy. Is that Christopher Lambert? That's Christopher fucking Lambert. What is going on in this film?
I thought I saw him in the trailer, but I wasn't 100% sure.
Either, but then I was like, then he said in that way that Christopher Lambert has that he talks. What is going on? And Nick, I know it's a little bit late to actually, but it's like, what is wrong with Nicolas Cage?
I don't know what you're talking about. I would totally see him in a Superman movie if they made it. I'm just saying.
Oh my god.
It was like he was stoned for the whole thing. It was like he was off his
face. He probably was.
He's got like no money, so he has to take every role that he gets. But it is like
he is a spender in Hollywood, I heard.
He is totally broke, as I understand it.
Yeah.
But you remember the scene from Kick-Ass when he was on fire and screaming, but not screaming like he was in pain, but like acting like he was in pain, but not understanding what pain feels like. Like I don't know, what are you doing there, Nicholas? but that's just like the whole, you know, just squawking and honking and you know, there's like one cool set piece in it, which is where the idea that whatever the Ghost Rider rides changes with him. So, Transformers fans will remember Cybertron Metroplex. Well, he gets in one of those. a gigantic, you know, multi-story bucket wheel excavator. Mm. And turns into a flaming death wagon. And that was pretty cool.
That's something that's kind of going on in the current Ghost Rider, where she, like, you know, turned a bullet train into a skull-headed flaming thing.
Well,
so.
It's one or two other vehicles in it as well, you know. But like, although they do well with the look of the Ghost Rider, you know. Although, I mean, it's funny. Like every time I hear that one of the guys from the new film talking down something about the first film, I think, but I like that. You know, it's like they have rejigged Ghost Rider's appearance a little bit so that
I do kind of like the new appearance. They kind of burn out.
Yeah, you know. I'm not big on that. I would have liked a brighter, whiter skull, because it would then stand out against the burnt black leather that he wears, you know, so it would be this hip glowing.
I guess it could be a problem if it's like the whole movie's like really dark and you know, it blends in with the background or something.
But I like there's some bits I like whenever like he gets punched out pretty hard or doused with water or whatever, like the skull, it doesn't stop being on fire, but it just gives off smoke instead of flame, you know, as this, if the fire gutters and goes out of it, it just starts smoking as a, you know, and that's cool enough. But Cage plays the rider really weird as well, you know. It's like when it first appears, he's playing it like it's an animal, so it's like it's stalking the prey, but it's like if you could just sort of imagine Ghost Rider going around like a raptor.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, you're
sort
selling
this.
This
is the point of it, doesn't it?
Nothing.
But doesn't it sort of miss the point of what Ghost Rider is in that way? I mean,
well, that's basically what I thought. I mean, the whole thing presents Ghost Rider. And of course, that it's a whole Hulk-style metaphor where he learns to accept the good part of the Rider and bring the angel out of Ghost Rider and use his powers for good. But, I mean...
I thought he'd kind of gotten to that at the end of the first movie, like where he's like, I accept it to use it to fight you, the devil. You know, he did the whole scene at the end of it where he's like, I want to keep it, you know?
Lot of point.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He says, want to use this power to fight you, and then he goes and hides in Eastern Europe, of all places.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
Yeah, that's what you do. It's just so frenetic and There's a story buried in there somewhere, but any shreds of it that might have crept out are just buried under Nicolas Cage's gurning goon head. It's probably Marvel's worst film.
Except maybe for Elektra. There's Punisher Warzone.
It's worse than Punisher Warzone. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Fantastic Four number two.
I mean, at least Punisher Warzone has that dude flipping through the air. Alone.
You know, no, today now. There's nothing wrong with FF2. Leave it alone.
I will leave it alone. I won't watch it again.
So long and short, it's probably what everybody expects.
You're heading in for. Yeah, understand what you, I mean. It's like who was even asking for it?
Well, the question I want to ask is, are we getting Ghost Rider 3?
Let's hope not. Let's hope that maybe they'll have
the play the Ghost Rider without effects by that stage. You will just be this desiccated thing. And,
the sad thing is, if it makes money, Hollywood would make it, because Hollywood can't just do a sequel. It's all about trilogies. So of course you have to have a trilogy.
It's taken 5 years to make this. Yeah. I can't see it. I mean, nobody was asking for this. It's terrible. There's no way this is going to make money. I mean, it's terrible.
I do want a Ghost Rider 3, but I want one without Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, I want a reboot.
You want my 90s Ghost Rider.
Yeah.
You want your Dan.
You want my 90s Ghost Rider.
No,
I talked to Kilby about this the other day. All you got to do is just have this dude, his sister gets killed, he gets the bike, he fights a vampire and a creepy dude in a mask. There's your movie.
Nope.
That sounds awesome.
In the ultimate FU, they're just going to skip over Dan and go straight to Alejandra.
Well. Do you think that would work, if the female Ghost Rider in Hollywood?
I think that would actually play.
Yeah, you could let it play, definitely. Wouldn't be too much of an issue with that. It's just that there's a very, very elegant simplicity in the core concept of the Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider that can grab any audience with a bit of understanding of Faust. Like, you know, the Faustian, the devil, selling your soul to the devil to save whatever, you know, and then being made the devil's minion. That's my mother understands that. I told her I was going to see Ghost Rider. She asked me, what's that about? And I was like, I see that. And then I got to the part about how he's the fiery skeleton that rides the motorbike made of fire. And she was like,
oh, it's absurd.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, so it's terrible, but if you go in with that understanding, there are a few little things in there that'll maybe make you like the flaming bucket wheel excavator, and if you can simply just laugh at the bizarre performance Nicolas Cage gives, you'll be doing fine as well. But
it's so hard to laugh at Nicolas Cage. He's such a serious actor.
But it's almost like, there is this bit where they're in a diner with the kid, you know, and I didn't see it happen, but you know, Nicolas Cage reaches over to brush his hair, and I thought he was just attempting some kind of pathetic, plaintive, fatherly hair tousling thing, to try and win the boy's affection. The boy looks at him, and I'm not sure if it was actually the reason or if it was the excuse he came up, but his explanation was, it was a bee. Thought it was going to sting your face.
What?
And I'm like, yeah, is that a Nicolas Cage in-joke or what was... Not the bees!
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sounds like the only thing that's missing in this train wreck is the actual train in the train wreck.
Right.
There weren't any trains, no. Yeah. But...
Wow. Okay. So that's fantastic. It's good to see one of my favorite comic books.
You guys should see it in the over the course of the next week, and we'll see what everyone else thought next week.
God. All right. So let's save this with reviews.
Muppets again instead.
Yeah, well, Muppets just came out here last week, so I saw that, you know.
Now, you
How
love
was
Muppets,
that for you?
Right? Muppets was awesome,
oh, hell,
right?
Yeah.
Muppets okay.
Was
all
right. Man, I tell you,
that,
I spent
that justifies last... your opinion on Ghost Rider, Ricky, you like the Muppets.
I spent the last half hour of Muppets in abject agony because you wouldn't believe how badly I needed to pee, but there there was no getting up and leaving that film because of the sheer briskness of the pace. If I had got up, even if I had, you know, run and just done it as hard as I could, I would have missed like three separate like short scenes.
That I am sure the, you gotta. You really need run pee for that. You really, they're usually really good.
I don't know what that is.
I will just say the Muppets had the best cameo ever. I actually stood up and clapped. I was like, yay! I can't say what it is.
I'm totally a Muppet of a man.
No, well, I saw it, but remind me. You know. Oh, yeah, Muppet of a man. What you're talking about? Were you talking about that cameo?
Yes, that one.
Okay. Yeah, well, I did grin when that happened because I was like, oh, my God. Well, let's not tell anybody what that one is. Yeah.
Because okay. I was the happiest person alive at that point. Anyways, sorry. Okay. Tangent.
No, very good. That's fine. All right, Chris Triplett. Let's go. Yes. Make our show books. Grow.
We need to actually talk about comic books.
Yes, we do.
That's right. Okay. I got Batman number 6,
woo-hoo!
Which is pretty good. Follow-up to the awesome Batman number 5, where Batman was losing his shit.
Mm-hmm.
Very good issue. This issue follows up where the Talon, which is basically the assassin guy from the Court of Owls, has just stabbed Batman in his back, and it's like sticking out his front, and it looks gruesome. And dude, I think Batman's gonna die. I mean, he's in the worst situation he's ever gonna.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now you guys all read this, right? Except for McFeely.
Yep.
I have kicked myself hard and resigned myself.
The cover alone is awesome. Come on.
That cover is pretty fantastic. It's just to describe it's like Batman with, like, it looks like he's kind of morphing into an owl because he has like an owl talon hand sticking out like his, and he's like, ah!
It's great.
it's great.
The art really has evolved a lot. You know, really, you think about how, you know, simple and straightforward the first issue, the first even few issues is of the series, and then you get to 6 and or 5 and 6, and it's just like the doors get blown off of reality, and it's, you know, just descended into this place of awesome madness.
Yeah, like the first couple of issues of Batman, it's like straightforward, kind of a clean look to it, where it's like Batman. Like, I keep saying, like, if Todd McFarlane drew it, and then, like, when he gets to the stuff where he's in the maze with the Court of Owls, then it gets all nasty-looking, and it looks crazy. I mean, it looks like you said, like insanity, and it's just kind of grimy-looking, and I don't know. It looks like a horror movie. I know I'm reading a Batman comic.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yes!
It's like I'm watching, like I don't know, like Friday the 13th or something. I don't know. It's just creepy. You know? Maybe it's because
love it.
Maybe it's because everybody wears a mask. Because, like, I mean, this issue is basically a big fight where Talon is just, you know, beating the hell out of Batman. The court.
Yeah, the court. And that is just creepy because,
yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, again, and some of this is maybe just Bruce's perspective, you know, through.
Yeah, I gave it a little leaf through, but you're talking about when they keep looking different from panel to panel, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the people are just like, you know, they have the claw, you know, arms and cheering from the top of this. I mean, there's no sense even of how much of this is happening really until the end, and even that is abstract.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, the Court of Owl people are just creepy as heck. I just love it, like, when, you know, they decide that they're gonna kill him, and they say, like, you know, it's a, what do they say, we've decided to display your bones, and only 3 people have ever earned that right, Batman, you know? And so, like, the guy starts, like, beating up, the Talon starts beating him up, and then the court descends upon him, and they're, like, covering him and clawing at him, and, like, Batman's like, all right, this is it.
Now I'm just dead. Starts to give up. It's great. Just it's just like,
that's,
you know,
what was so weird about Batman. It's like, what? Yeah. No, this can't be happening.
Yeah. Then you see that exposed eye looking over, and he sees that that portrait of Alan Wayne, which is what is he, like, his great grandfather?
I think
was
he
that
said it was his Yeah, it's like his great-great-grandfather.
I think he was like his great-great-grandfather, and he's like thinking about like, oh, you know, no one came to help him. You know, there was nobody to help him and stop all this. And then he just snaps, and you get this page where it looks like Bat-Hulk.
Yeah. I mean, fangs, enormous, knocking them all back.
That's the way to describe it, Bat-Hulk.
Oh, my
like,
God.
It was basically the Hulk moment where, like, Bruce Banner's getting beaten up by a whole bunch of, like, you know, guys, like, in a bar or something. And then, like, he just Hulks out and, like, throws him over the bar. But it was, and, like, again, you know, this scene right here just, like, is this reality? Because that does not look like reality right there. Because they're, like, he's, like, 20 feet tall, you know, and the Court of Owls, like, falling off of him. And then he just proceeds to, you know, he gets his second wind and just begins to beat the hell out of Talon. And he finds a way, you know, to get out. But it's an interesting issue, just like the last issue, maybe even more so than this one, just to see how far Batman has fallen. You know, because this is, I mean, because you don't see this for Batman. I mean, this is like, even the Joker never gets Batman to this point.
Yeah.
Like, by the end of this issue, when he's in the water, there's a scene and he looks so, you know, thin from being lost, you know, for so long. Like, he hasn't been eating and everything. He looks bad. And, like, by the end of this issue, like, it's like, I mean, he even kind of makes you think, well, he just falls down into the water. It even makes you kind of think, well, you know, he even says something like, you know, I'm dead or something, or something, you know, am I dead, you know, aren't I dead or something. And we never actually see him get out of the water at the end of the issue, but the end of the issue is really cool because
Talon,
like, you know, Talon, I guess he's dead. It looks like he beats him. He's dead, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, Talon's dead at the end of the issue. But then, like, the court is talking about you know, what happens next. And we get this big exposure at the end of the issue with all the red coffins. And one of them was open. And Talon was in it. And he was just one Talon.
Yeah.
You know, there's several other Talons that are coming.
Yeah. But this series, you know, again, you know, I talked about the art being really good at the beginning, and it's like we said, as far as like the beginning of this series, but if nothing else, especially the last two issues and this issue, I mean, the art is just like the centerpiece. It really creates a lot of the elements of the story in a fairly straightforward way. I mean, it's not as, you know, abstract as, say, a J.H. Williams or Marcos Martin or something, but it is like that in a lot of ways. And this just seems to be such a different book than a lot of the other things that are going on, at least within the primary sort of DC books. You know, if you're going to think about...
It's very different.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about, like, you know, Batman, Wonder Woman, Superman, they're like, you know, Flash, you know, they're real staple books. This looks totally different than a lot of those books. You know, this is something you would expect out of Swamp Thing or, you know, Animal Man or something. And yet here it is in the pages of Batman.
Horror. Like, Swamp Thing's very horror atmosphere. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, when you're reading this, it's like, this is like a horror story. This is like somebody decided to make, like, this horrible, you know, killer, axe killer movie. And, hey, Batman is the victim.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like it. It's like, oh, wow. I mean, the part that sold me onto this is when Batman was about ready to give up. You're like, yeah, that doesn't happen. That's not supposed to happen, but it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they've done a really good job of making the court villains, like good villains. Yeah. I mean, like, they could have been something where it's like, oh, they're in like one issue and there's a reference to him and like he fights this Talon dude and then, hey, there's a villain, move on to the next guy. They didn't, you know. Yeah. it's been basically Court of Owls since the beginning of DC New, and I don't know how much longer
it's gonna be. While I mean, even the most recent solicits are still talking about this story going on, so
Well, there's a big Bat crossover coming up that's supposed to be spinning off the back of this.
So I mean, this seems to be the big deal, you know, within the Bat books, and I'm eating it up. I love it.
It's great. Yeah, like if you're not buying this book, you should be. If you're looking for a Batman book, this is your book. I mean, it's incredible.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Nicole. excited?
It's my turn. I suppose I'm excited because, like I said, I'm a sucker that anything that Stephen King does. So you put his name on it, I'll pick it up. this one's kind of interesting because we have IDW publishing Road Rage, which is Stephen King and his son Joe Hill, who does Lock and Key, the comic book series, collaborating on this. So, yeah, I'm like, okay, let's find this out. So basically the story is about a biker gang called the Tribe. They have some new people in there, and they have the old folks. So let's just say they're starting to butt heads right at the very beginning. The whole story is about them losing $60,000 in money. And, of course, everyone wants their share. No one's getting along because they want their money. So they're trying to figure out where it's gone, what happened. And basically, you get a backstory of my gosh, I'm still learning the characters' names. So, oh, Race is our main character. Him and this guy named Clark were in the military together, and why they were at war. Clark was the a medical officer, but he used to, on the side, have his own little meth lab and sell it to the soldiers. So that's where this money came from, and so after the war, they decided, okay, we want our share of the money. Well, they go over to Clark's place. He's like, it's gone. I don't have it. I don't know where it went to. And, of course, there's a little outbreak, and apparently they kill his 17-year-old girlfriend. So now they're on the loose for murder. And so they pull over. They're trying to get the money for the drugs. They're trying to, you know, not get caught for this murder. And all hell's breaking loose, and this is where it starts, the whole road rage. Race decides to get pissed off and throw his beer at a trucker. There you go. So the trucker, he doesn't say anything. He just takes off down the road. Well, after they finally get their plans in store, they decided, okay, we're going to go to Solo. That quick, because that's where Clark's sister's at, and she must know something about Clark and the money. And so, of course, down the road, they meet up with this trucker who decides, haha, I'm going to get you guys back. So basically, this trucker is all of a sudden turns into Maximum Overdrive, if you guys know that Stephen King movie.
Yes.
He decides to take out most of the gang. Anyone that was in the back of the gang, he's just running him over with this oil tanker. So, and this is where it gets very, very gory. Now, if you guys like blood guts, there's some skull crushing, bones breaking, blood splatter, everything. Curb stomping, blood, teeth going everywhere. It's nasty. It's just nasty. So that's where it ends, because you only see a few of these guys survive this road rage, except for he's actually just taking after Race, which is the leader. And so the rest of the crew is like, okay, what are we supposed to do? So that's where it's starting, and that's where it basically ends, is you just see this massive truck heading down just for this one motorcycle that's just covered in blood and guts. I would say this isn't for everyone, but if you're a Stephen King fan, it is right up your alley. It's very talky, and like, if you know, read Stephen King, it's very wordy, so that's not a surprise. But you get to know these characters, you get to know their history, you can see the emotions on them and what they're going through. Like I said, it's not for everyone, but definitely if you like good old Stephen King horror, this is where it's going to go. So,
who is the artist on this one, though?
The artist is Nelson Daniel. The only problem I have with his artwork is, crap, I can't remember, where they use the old comic book pixels, dots.
Oh, Band-Aid dots.
Yeah.
It works in some places, but sometimes it's just like it feels a little off because they don't use it in every single panel. And some of the panels... Some of the panels they use is like a really wide range, and so they have these big dots, like in a scenery, and it just didn't work out for me. But overall,
it's not just like used in flashbacks or anything. It's just in different.
Yeah, I was gonna mention
randomly.
That.
It's in everything. It's in present day. It's in the flashback. But one thing I got to say about the art, just like Stephen King in the movie, he does make an appearance in the comic book.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool. Okay.
He's
a gas station attendant. Is that what he is? Gas station attendant.
He's one of the first ones to get killed. At least, I don't know if it really is him, but it's very strange how similar he looks to Stephen King. Very strange. Well, a younger Stephen King. So, that was when I turned that page. I'm like, I got excited about that. So,
he's got one of those faces that you don't really forget, you know?
Yeah. Yes, I'm pretty sure it was him, but yeah, if you like your Stephen King, you'll like this. But like I said, if you don't like your blood and guts, don't pick this up.
So, I like my blood and guts in me. I like
the
inside.
Like I said, there's a lot of people getting their heads ran over by this big, oil tanker. So
wow.
There's bone and blood. Yeah, it's nasty. But I like that stuff. So. Yeah, we'll see if Race wins against this Maximum Overdrive. Kind of has that kind of feel, Maximum Overdrive. So.
Nice. Does it have like a green goblin looking head on the front of it?
It needs
that.
it just has a cow skull on the front. It's a big, huge oil tanker. Like I said.
Mm, right.
Yay! Road rage. There you go.
Excellent. So, that comes to me. I've talked so bad about Transformers comics for so long. I feel it is now my duty, when they are good, to talk about them. And in particular, this one, which I'm really enjoying. So, of course, I'm talking about More Than Meets the Eye. This is the second issue. I think the first thing I want to say about this is that it's dense. Like, there's a lot going on. It's one thing I think that it's like Dan Slott talked about where, you want to, and we talk about a lot about Spider-Man comics, where it's like there's so many things going on. And I definitely felt that about this. There's a lot of, little side stories and character moments and things that are going on in this that I certainly felt worth, the read and worth what's going on. Just for the real quick overview, of course, the crew of the Lost Light has set down after their sort of explosive first launch. And most of the crew, or a good portion at least of the crew, getting expelled into space and then crashing to the planet. So what's happening now is basically the rescue mission bringing everybody back to the ship, active, mostly deactivated. At the same time, another ship bursts out of hyperspace and into the atmosphere, and Skids is piloting this ship, but he has a bit of amnesia, and it takes him a minute to remember what he's doing or what's going on. But before you know it, he's fighting a group of gigantic robots. We'll come back to that. in the meantime, Ratchet is going to have to put everybody back together. Skids is joining. It looks like Skids is going to be joining the crew. It's just a lot of little character moments in this. And then just as things start to look like they're going to get back on track, things go wrong again. But let's talk about and break it down a little bit. First of all, I do want to mention something I mentioned at the beginning of the show, which was the art. We had mentioned that the first issue was Nick Roche, and has a very particular art style, and I believe one of our number was, shall we say, skeptical of an Alex Milne.
Is he still on the... Okay, I was going to say, is he still on the call? Because maybe he cut out on purpose.
We may need to have him recycle his video, because it looks like he's trying to hide at this moment.
Yeah. Oh, well, I can't see any of you guys. So,
Well, that's your fault.
Yes, that's true.
So,
yeah, well, I give him credit where it's due. Alex Milne is continuing his current trend of making each piece of work that he produces for IDW better than his last, and indeed the work of his career. This was something that only kicked off with his work about a year ago when he came on to The Ongoing during the Revenge of the Decepticons story arc at the start of last year, and carried on through the James Roberts two-parter later on, where his work evolved to a point where it was almost unrecognizable as his past work, because he was a guy who was hired out of the fandom by Dreamwave years ago when, you know, brutal honesty, his work was not approximating a professional standard, and he was delivering some pretty despicable stuff. I've just been looking through some Energon issues to get some pictures for the wiki. Oh, dear. but he has... He done a good job. His storytelling is really up to snuff on this. I don't want to take away from the undeniably good job he has done on this. Characters are emoting in a way I have not seen the characters emote in an Alex Milne piece of art before. You know, definitely. There's even body language in here and facial expressions. It does, but he hasn't actually changed his style to any great degree that I can see. Now, it doesn't look like an Alex Milne comic normally does, but that's a combination of, well, he's working from simpler character models, for starters. You know, a lot of these are clearly Nick Roach's character models that he drew up for the series, which Milne is then working off of, so they are simpler. And also, I think tons and tons of the credit has got to go to Josh Burcham, the colorist, who I just adore this soft, almost pastely palette that he has done the series in. Artistically, I said it before, this is as far from what Dreamwave was doing as IDW has ever come. From when they started up until now, this is the furthest point on the line, like artistically, away from all the lessons and styles of Dreamwave. You know, it's just nice to have simple, colored artwork that is not drowning in glow effects and pointless shadows and no understanding of how light works. You know, it's nice to have a surface that can just be one solid cell-shaded color to allow the line work to shine through. I mean, this is probably the first time in Alex Milne's career when his line work has actually been allowed to shine through and not be buried in a sea of overly photoshopped murk. Again, I was looking at those Energon issues. Jesus. You know, he'll never take the top spot from me. But he's also achieved a great deal and tonally followed Nick very, very well without trying to be Nick at the same time. So, you know, a lot of credit definitely has to go in this direction.
Yep. I was like, totally, you know, I had a lot of reservations after our, you know, last review, and I was just totally pleased. I mean, I love this. I mean, it's not just the writing. It's just, like you said, it's the way the panels are laid out. It's the, you know, just
that was the next part of my thing that I forgot I was going to say. See, it's not like I want to take credit away from Alex, but a lot of the credit has to go to the colorist on this. And again, I kind of think the large portion of whatever credit is left over has to go over to Roberts as well, who I strongly suspect has done some very specific scripts to show you where everything is and what everybody needs to be doing, because...
Well, this is a really complicated story, too.
It's that or Milne, after not learning for 7 years, finally started learning in the last year.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, however it came to be, it's certainly working. You know, we'll put it that way.
Whatever the case may be, I will be perfectly happy to enjoy more of this.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, please.
So,
you look at things like, I mean, first of all, Skids.
Yes.
For God's sake.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
It's like, I'm excited again to read Transformers.
Robots in Disguise is the one that's dealing with Bumblebee and Prowl and Starscream and the recognizable characters. It's not like there aren't recognizable characters in this. You've got Hot Rod, you've got Ultra Magnus, you've got Ratchet. But this is the one that is just singing with the work it's doing with the obscure characters. And I mean, we're not just talking obscure characters. We're not just talking like it's finally Trailbreaker's time to shine. We are talking about Rewind and Chrome Dome and Swerve and Tailgate and Skids. Like literally, except for like one issue of the Marvel Comics, two issues of the Marvel Comics, these are characters who have never done anything. Chrome Dome was like perennially the forgotten headmaster.
Yeah.
Brainstorm, Highbrow, Hardhead, they all had like at least character ticks or something that made them stand out in the rebirth. But Chrome Dome is just the other one who has never done anything. Swerve and Tailgate were the guys who appeared like in mute silence in one episode of the cartoon and have never been in any comics. Rewind had a little to do in the third season. Whirl again was a wrecker and never really did anything, and you know, wasn't even in the American comics. Like, these are not random choices. You know, this is very consciously we have had chosen the characters who have never had time to shine. And the speed at which suddenly I want to Swerve,
yeah,
a Tailgate.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I wanted to Swerve so bad. Yeah. He's easily become one of my favorite characters in comic
like
books.
That, you know, so and it's not like he's not like the forced funny character where they're saying, oh, we're going to make him really funny and the kids will love him. No, I mean, he's just naturally funny and flows out of this so well, you know?
You've got to read the comment that he talks about finding the 12 fragments of the Primal Key, please.
Yes. Oh my god. Yes. No, I'm just kidding.
Hang on, where's the...
No, my favorite is when he's talking about how he's jealous of his eyebrows. You're emoting! He's jealous of your eyebrows!
I laugh at comments. I don't think I have ever like laughed at a Transformers comic, but I laughed loud and hard at that one when Whirl suddenly wakes up and maddened, he grips Rung around the throat and is like, why are you doing this? It's your eyebrows! He's jealous of your capacity for self-expression! That's not helping!
Yes. No, page 20. This story was just so primal.
Awesome.
You know, Skids is there. He's like, listen, Swerve, I thought this was going to be a quick trip, but the guy over there with the eyebrows, he says we're on some sort of quest. Yeah. We got to find the 12 fragments of the Primal Key, unlock the Infinity Gate, travel sideways in time, defeat the Agents of Chaos, and restore order to the multiverse. Nah, just messing with you. We're actually looking for the Knights of Cybertron, a mythical group of supremely powerful do-gooders who left our homeworld 10 million years ago to civilize the galaxy, leaving a trail of breadcrumbs in the form of a star map hidden inside a dead matrix. Yeah, yeah. I kind of like the first one better.
That's great.
Oh, but like, even Skids himself is like, I mean, I don't know if it felt like the way to making a new Skids was to wipe the old Skids' memory so we could have this, you know? But, I mean, but the fun thing is like, you know, that was the first warning we got in the time travel message at the end of the previous issue was, don't let them take Skids.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Don't let them take
Skids on the Lost Light?
Yeah.
Or...
Don't let them take him away. Yeah, what is it? Yeah.
Well, because there is clearly something. I mean, Skids. Skids is running from these robots, and it feels like he's escaped from somewhere, you know. But the fascinating thing is, like, I mean, there's a scene earlier. He's got a gun in his hand, and he says, I'm unarmed. And I'm like, I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, oh, he's holding that out to drop it. He's gonna get rid of that. But it becomes apparent at the end of the story that he doesn't realize he's holding a gun.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Not all there upstairs with Skids, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you have the earlier scene, like when he first comes out of space, and he, you know, on the wall above him is, "You haven't escaped. They're all around you."
Yeah,
you know, and it makes you wonder.
Rantings. It's just because they're the ship, and that's
well. But it makes you wonder: is that it, or is it something else?
I mean, you know, I'm inclined to take where there's room to explore this. I am inclined to take a lot of what it says at face value, you know.
Yeah.
They're all around you. Probably does just mean the fact that the ship was the robots and that's it. You know, it's like last issue. We were obviously meant to postulate the possibility that Pryl was responsible for the bomb, for putting Pryl. We know Pryl had something put on the Lost Light, and we're obviously supposed to think maybe put a bomb on there. And we find out in this issue that no, some dipshit just stood too close to the engine whenever
which
it
was great. Oh, and I mean, even the lead in here where he's like, you know, where Brainstorm's trying to talk throughout his, like, you know, he keeps describing himself, and he's like, no, I'm. Oh, it's Brainstorm.
Yeah, the new character, the Duobot Orr, was standing too close to the quantum generator when it went jiggy, and he wound up getting physically mashed into the matter of it. You know, the molecules got intertwined, and that, you know, it wasn't, there was an explosion and Orr got stuck in the generator. It was like Orr was dumb and got stuck in the generator, and that caused the explosion. And, you know, I'm inclined to take that at face value and say that that's what happened. I mean, now our thing at the end of this issue here is, spoilers, the second Duobot, Shock, is found with a spark ripped out by Red Alert in the bowels of the ship, and Red thinks there's a spark eater on board. And obviously we're supposed to maybe think the spark eater got snuck on by Pryl, but it'll probably turn out next issue that it wasn't. Yeah, something else.
That'll get drug out.
Will it get dragged out? That's the question. The briskness of the pacing at work here would imply otherwise.
Yeah. But it's so, I mean, even at that, I mean, there's so much great stuff. The dialogue, the lines in here. I'm curious about one thing. I mentioned this to Brian. You know, these large, hulking, seemingly not mindless, but at least single-minded drone ships are saying one thing, which is 1984. Is it just me, or is that speaking, or is it just unintentional to the sort of truck nut monkey?
No, because G1? This is what's going to happen after the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover. They're going to have a crossover with Doctor Who and Transformers, and they're going to go back to 1984.
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know.
I don't think it's supposed to. I don't think Roberts has any kind of derogatory attitude.
No. Well, no, I don't think. I mean, and that's what makes it
look
like. I
just hope 1984 winds up being some sort of like a destination, like for the computer to get to. Like, 1984, it's like actually where the Knights of Cybertron are or something. You know,
or like Skids could have just been prisoner number 1984 and whatever he's.
Something like that, you know.
You know what else I love? Drift.
Drift
is... Oh my God.
He's turned into the Pinkie Pie of the group. He's way too happy.
Yeah, well, that's the gag. Like, Drift is... It's like they finally copped on to the... It's not like, oh, Drift's so cool. You love Drift. Everybody love Drift. You love Drift. Drift. It's not that anymore, you know. This is Drift now with an actual personality that's not sculpted around how artificially cool he is. Something that happened to him has prompted a change in his personality, and I feel like it is playing with the fact that he is annoying. He's annoying, and it's sort of playing into the fact that the fandom thinks he's kind of annoying as well, but now it's like, and now you wind up, you love to be annoyed by Drift, you love to annoy, I want the medibay buzzing with positive energy.
Yeah.
What's that little speech he gives Rodimus at the end? I think you should accentuate the positive. We've got the quantum generators working again. Big tick. We're ready to resume our quest. Big tick. And we've managed to save virtually all the Autobots that got pulled outside. That's more of a little tick, but it's still a tick.
I really like Rung as well. I'm warming to Rung.
You know, and look at Rung. Rung is a creator. Roberts created Rung years ago, back when he was still just writing fanfics. And here he is now, without feeling like a weird intrusive creator insert character like Drift did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and well, and especially since he's World's Therapist, that. That moment,
poor guy.
Therapist.
Just the fact that Transformers have therapists is just like, it's something I'd never thought of before, but is just...
He's the Donna Troy of Transformers.
Yeah, exactly. But there's other things that...
We've got Donna Troy and Pinkie Pie on board. Wow!
We could go on and on about this. There's a couple of things that I'll mention real quick, which is the animosity between Cyclonus... in particular, Cyclonus towards Whirl, which is just, you know, it's like they bring them together and they're like, look, you guys need to make up. We're going to be on the ship together.
Oh,
so,
makeup. Yeah.
So Cyclonus gives him a big hug and he's like, I'm going to kill you. Not today. Maybe not for a while, but I will kill you.
I don't think you'll see it coming. I love this Cyclonus.
The last thing Horrible needs is reason to be paranoid as well. So yeah. That's not going to end well.
But the
and I love this line is like where Skids introduces himself. You know, Swerve says, "Who are you? An ex-wrecker? One of the Warriors Elite? An old pit fighter?" I'm a theoretician. Just feels like it's like motherfucker.
Yeah, it's just sort of lacking. But then the other thing is this last little bit that I really love where Swerve convinces Tailgate that he needs to try to transform. And then for the rest of the issue, he's very slowly attempting to transform.
He didn't even finish. That was what surprised
me. No, not even close.
So, hey, Americans, did you catch the joke in the Duobots names?
No. But the Duobots
names are Shock and Ore. You have to pronounce it in a British accent, like James Roberts has, to get it. Shock and all.
Shock and all, yeah.
Shock and all. Shock and all. That's how we pronounce both those words. Shock and all.
I did like the bit later on where it's like, well, at least it'll be easier to tell them apart.
One thing I want to talk about this comic is the interaction between, is it Rodimus? Can we say Rodimus? Is that Rodimus?
Yeah,
okay. Okay, Rodimus and Cyclonus. I love that interaction, that speech that Cyclonus gives him. Awesome! That one page. Beautiful. Love Cyclonus. Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting relationships in this, and, you know.
Yeah. It's all relationship as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
I adore this little Meet the Cast page in the back as well.
Meet the Cast is awesome.
Weapons and Brainstorm, weapons engineer, prolific murderer.
my favorite Swerve, though.
Well, especially
Good friend to all, best friend to none, weapon of choice, the mouth. I love Ultra Magnus, I think, is my favorite. Second in command, takes job and everything else extremely seriously, smiled once and regretted it ever since.
But Chromedome is classified as far as his...
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
We know Chromedome can do stuff because Prowl wanted him to stay behind, but you don't know what sort of stuff he does.
Yeah, there's no indication.
Well, in this description, so does that make Swerve actually the Deadpool of the group? His weapon is the mouth?
Well, basically. Except he's not. He doesn't seem to be a fighter of any kind. You know, he just.
Is he going to break the fourth wall?
Oh, never, hopefully.
No. But no.
I
mean,
the fact that they didn't manage, they were still able to keep his metallurgist faction as well, despite the complete.
Yeah.
The only personality he's ever had before was his tech specs. You know, where he was a crazy driver who was easily distracted by everything around him, and it's just like they've grown the personality into something bigger and broader that subset of personality could fit within very nicely.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we have talked at length. It is really good stuff.
Yeah.
You should be reading.
Great comic.
Even if it's one of those deals.
Totally
where it's
support
like,
this book.
Even if you're not a big Transformers fan, even if you're a peripheral fan, but you like good comics that are just funny and really, you know, sort of character driven. Yeah, I mean, you know, I would check it out for sure. So anyway, there you go. Good stuff. Still good. More than meets the eye. And thanks, Alex. Okay, Chris McFeely then.
Yeah, okay. Well, I got Daredevil this week. This is the start of a new story. It looks like it's only been two parts long. So isn't that one of the best things about Mark Waid's Daredevil? Short stories? The fact that you can have one, you can have two, you can have four, you can have whatever. It's old school. But the very idea that I can say a comic that tells a story in two issues, how old school. Oh, that just depresses me. But there's nothing depressing about Mark Waid's Daredevil.
Nope.
In which, following the call he received from Foggy at the end of the previous issue about the disappearance of his father's casket from a cemetery in which all the coffins have disappeared, Daredevil follows them down underground and finds that the Mole Men's Moloids have stolen them for him. And it's essentially, up until the last couple of pages, Daredevil's odyssey through Subterranea. And what a grotesque sort of haunting selection of imagery it is. The single best panel is Daredevil riding on, well, not a panel, but sequence, I should say, Daredevil riding on a casket, poling his way down an underground river with his staff, you know, talking to himself in his head. We're headed somewhere, almost certainly towards the Mole Man, who's 5 foot short, old and blind, not exactly an intimidating physical threat, nothing to be afraid of, just caves. And then we see his surroundings through his radar vision, so it's just the water and the caves, the swirling pink squiggly radar line mass of caves. But then the next panel is a totally silent one of what the world is actually like, and he's surrounded by monsters that he has no idea are there, because they're all, like, the noise of them is buried over the crash of the waves. It's noted that he used some kind of, and what was it, what did he use, flipping it back.
He had deaden his senses, didn't he? Because
he stole a jar of camphor from one of the coroners so that he could deaden his sense of smell, because he's falling corpses. So the rotting smell would have knocked him out. So he can't smell them or hear them, and he's surrounded. No, nothing happens. They don't attack him or anything, but that's what makes it all the better.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he just drifts by without ever knowing. And, well, you know, the very fact that this is the Mole Man is what is tremendous. You know, this is blind radar sense guys going at one another. You know, that, again, it's like Claw. It's like, how has nobody thought of that before?
Yeah, like, how has Daredevil never fought the Mole Man?
Yeah.
Exactly. I was thinking that, too, because I've never really read Daredevil. I'm like, is this a new villain, or is this...
Oh God, no! So, the Mole Man is the single oldest character of the Marvel Age of Comics, and was the villain.
Well, see,
he fought the Fantastic Four way back in the day.
That
thing coming up out of the ground and they're attacking it. He's controlling it.
That's his.
Yeah.
That's how old this character is, you know. But the grotesqueness of the Mole Man is played wonderfully in the silence and blackness of this. You know, he doesn't really say anything. He just sort of mutters to himself. He cracks the coffin open and his bones fall out, and no is all he says. He's looking for something in these coffins, and I'm not going to tell you what it is that he finds it when he finds it, because you got to see that to believe it. Like, but when he finds it, like the utter silence, not a dialogue balloon on the page, the mute horrificness of
That's
what he does
page.
He doesn't do anything horrible to what he finds,
but it's still pretty creepy.
Almost Poe-ish, macabre nature of the page. It's a fantastic page, you know. And I want to know, I want the next issue. Well, what is he doing, you know? That's, you know, and the climax plays again off of what we saw earlier, which is in this subterranean realm with his senses deadened. You know, Daredevil is surrounded by creatures who have all the same limitations that he does, but who have spent their lives down here. Daredevil is, despite the fact that he's in a physical arena where technically his handicaps shouldn't inhibit him, he is still the weaker foe here, because he is fighting enemies who have lived here all their lives. And you know, that's the simple brilliance of the idea of Daredevil versus the Mole Man. And then in the middle, we also have the Black Cat subplot, where she's going to steal the Omega Drive, which Daredevil stole from the Mega Crime families a few issues ago, which will in turn set up the Omega Effect crossover between this and Avenging Spider-Man and Punisher next month. And there's a great, like, she finds the safe that he hides it in, you know. There's a great little completely silent montage where she reaches for it, she remembers them kissing and hesitates, she reaches for it, she remembers them kissing and hesitates, she reaches for it, and she remembers all the money she's going to get, and she
bitch! Yep.
But let's be honest, what is it Daredevil says about her, I spent, as Daredevil, I just spent time with Black Cat, who I try to remind myself is not always a professional thief. Yeah, I think anyone, not one of us would blame you, Matt.
Yeah, no, probably not.
But, I mean, what I'm leaving out here is the fact that one of the bodies that has been stolen by the Mole Man here is Daredevil's father. So all of the grotesque things that are happening, it's like Daredevil spends the first 17 pages of this comic trying to deaden not merely his senses, but his heart to that fact, and to just let it just focus on the mission at hand and not worry about that. But it's when he cracks at the very end that it's like it all goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much point going any further and just telling that you... I mean, one of the best things about Daredevil is that you could pretty much just pick up an issue and go with it. You know, it is like Spider-Man, which we'll be talking about shortly. Nearly every issue. This starts with the quick recap of everything that's been going on, and it just introduces the new setup with this issue's villain. And again, I think we've said it before. It's just everything comics aren't at the minute, or everything it's, that it's a lot great. Of comics aren't.
Come on, this comic has Dancing with Dead Ladies. Nice. How can you not like that?
The graphic novel of the first 6 issues is out now, so of course we recommend anybody to get that. But if you've been reading any Marvel comics in like the last 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to have seen the double page spread they've taken out to advertise this fact. Right hand page is, as all graphic novel ads are, just a cover of the comic of the book going, Daredevil, Mark May, I don't know, volume 1. Left hand page of the double page spread, top to bottom, all these quotes of praise from a dozen and more different websites just saying how everybody's loving it. We called it the book of the year last year, the new book of the year last year, and it turns out a lot of other places book. Did too.
It was my favorite new book. Yeah, totally.
We were in a good company.
Yeah.
It's in contention to be my favorite comic I'm getting right now. I give it to Amazing Spidey because I love Spider-Man and I like the character better, but damn, Daredevil is really good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like I said, I mean, I read the first issue of this and then sort of dropped off and then came back on here, and it's still really awesome. It's great.
Yes.
Damn. I'm enjoying it. So, I'm still liking Turtles more, but I am enjoying this. So.
And that's Turtles really
is
funny
a
considering.
Knockoff.
Yeah.
That's not a joke, though. Turtles was Daredevil knockoff. Like,
yeah. So, awesome.
Ever wonder why they were called the foot? The hand? Yeah. The foot? The hand ninjas from Daredevil. That's why they're
and
called
it,
the
and
foot.
It was a blind kid that caused... Mm-hmm.
The canister that mutated the turtle bounced off Matt Murdock's head first and then fell down into the sewer with the turtles. That's real. That happened.
Wow.
I love that.
Yeah. See, you learn things on this show.
Mm. Yeah, that was a total Daredevil... knockoff. That was the whole point of it.
Yeah, because they did it. They just wanted to make fun of it because at that time, Daredevil was like really, really popular. Yeah, and it was this comic really about the hand. Oh, the hand. That's so stupid.
The foot.
Yeah. What was funny is that I read Batman before I read Daredevil this week, and I was thinking, oh, they could do a DC Marvel crossover where Daredevil meets up with Batman.
Well, you know, that's something that's sort of been joked about for a long time. But
yeah.
Daredevil has never been further from a place that would make a good crossover with Batman than he is now. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because he's just not red Batman anymore.
Yeah. Red blind Batman.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't want to forget that.
Yeah.
There's one little thing talking about red. That little piece about the fashion statement that men don't wear red boots.
Yeah.
Some of the little things you don't think about the way Murdoch has to sort of live his life is like he doesn't, you know, he can know what he's wearing or whatever, but he doesn't know what colors he's dressed in.
Yeah.
You know. Well, then, you know, he's like, how did you know I'm Daredevil? Well, let's just say.
I mean, it's Foggy, so Foggy knows anyway. But
yeah.
He was like saying, you know, while they argue about what to do, the nobody's actually investigating the tunnels because they're a safety hazard. They say you'd have to be nuts to risk your own poking down there. Or to put it another way, please help us, Daredevil.
that was a really, really good part. I love that.
It's obvious you came dressed for action. And is it obvious? How did you? Well, you're... and it's like the way the Black Cat's safe is all, you know... It doesn't work on keypad or keyholes or dials because they're not things that you would need to see to operate it. So he has a touch based safe.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like that, you know. I just think that's some things that the Daredevil movie did very well.
Yeah.
I watched that once in the theater, far from my mind.
See the director's cut. Maybe you'll like it better.
I never saw the director's cut, actually.
It makes the movie make more sense. I mean, because, like, dude, like, at the end of the movie, when, like, the cops are coming for the Kingpin, why are the cops coming for the Kingpin? Did they ever tell you in the movie? No,
they
didn't.
Remember.
They didn't. It's because they cut 40 minutes out of the movie. You have to watch the director's cut to find out.
Wow.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So that's the version that has Coolio as a rapper in prison.
Yes, it does.
That's the
Coolio
legal aspect
completely.
Of the film, yes.
They're
trying
Coolio
to run a case where
he...
Yeah. They're trying to do it, they're trying to like balance the two lives and have something where Matt Murdock is actually doing some law as well as just being Daredevil, which is a good idea.
There's a lot more of Foggy and Matt in the courtroom, which makes me like it so much better just because you get that. Like, there's a scene where, like... there's a scene where, like, they're trying to get the jury on Matt's side, and they just do the blatant Matt can't find his chair because he's blind thing. You know?
I should watch that, actually. It's been too long. It's been ages since I saw Daredevil. I should actually check the director's cut of it out. Couldn't be worse than Spirit of Vengeance.
Dude.
Yeah.
Oh, we go back. Oh.
From your review, it sounds like not too much could be that bad.
Cool. So yeah, you should be checking out Daredevil.
Yes.
Because I am now. So there you go. All right.
Anytime we ever get somebody else on this show convinced to read a book that one of the other one or more of us is reading, that means it's good and worth your time to read.
Yeah,
I haven't sucked anybody into reading anything, have I? I don't think so.
You guys sucked me into Avengers Academy.
Yeah.
No,
I got
Triplets to read Turtles finally.
So,
yeah, yay. Yeah. Hickman's Fantastic Four or Avengers Academy or Amazing Spider-Man, like I'm on Spidey now.
I'll get something.
The thing, so. Journey into Mystery.
Okay. So, let's race towards the end then, because I think we are running out of time.
We're tight tonight.
Yep, running a little late. So, anyway, or in that direction. Anyway, okay, so let's talk about this Spider-Man. I don't want to talk too in-depth. Well, you know, let's race over the story real quick. Basically, this is the reveal of something that we found out during Spider Island, which is that Michael Morbius is in Lab 6.
Yeah.
The storyline goes that he's actually old college buddies with Max Modell. And that's why Max has given him the space to try to find a cure for himself. They're sort of working off of a hybrid or a split line from the cure from all of the Spider Island.
Yeah, the anti-venom.
Try to heal him. Now, the most recent vial actually caused him to go bloodlusty for a while and try to eat Max, which which means that not only Spider-Man, but Watu has to help save the day, but not that Watu. This Uatu, which is Uatu Jackson.
And that's cool because he's like one of the guys who keeps appearing but who hasn't really got any time. Like, you got a pretty good feel at this stage for Grady and Bella and Sahani, if that's how that's pronounced. I don't know about this other dude. I couldn't even remember his name until they had him in the start here. Mm-hmm. Jürgen Munt.
Yeah.
I don't remember him at all. Because what do you remember? We had the great confusion over if there was that other guy, Stone. One issue he was Tiberius Stone, one issue he was Tyler Stone, one issue he was a redheaded nerd with spectacles and a bow tie, another issue he looked completely different again. It was really unclear if he was supposed to be working for Star Labs or if he was supposed to be in Lab 6 or whatever. We know now he's an ex-Star Labs guy. But this, you know, Jürgen here has had nothing.
Yeah.
And Uatu's just sort of hung around and been the stereotypical grumpy black kid. But Grady and Bella and Johnny all seem to have, you know, we've had a decent enough feel for them at this point. So this is Uatu's time to shine.
Yeah, and he gets a good portion of this.
He's the narrator for a big portion of this, and it turns out that his science is the science of monster hunting.
The study of monsters.
Yes. Great. Yeah.
He's got the room for zombies, the room for werewolves, ghouls, and then he gets to the one that says vampires, and it looks like something Blade would be wearing.
Yeah. But that's like, there's even a part of this where they finally decide they need to figure out, you know, between Peter and Uatu, they need to figure out who is in Lab 6. And so Peter does the easy thing and just breaks in, which again happens to be about the time that Michael's going crazy.
Because a drop of Spidey's blood after, you know, Uatu just sort of distracts him while he's... No, it's a jolt of spider sense. Distracts him while he's carrying out an experiment, just like a little metal splinter clips his finger and sinks into the wall. It's a little tiny stink of delicious radioactive blood.
Yeah.
Morbius on edge. That's why Morbius gets the lust back in him, you know?
Yeah.
But then the... So he kind of rushes that's the great thing as well. It's not just that Max has given him the lab to try and cure himself. Like, if he can actually come up with a substitute, he'll have created an artificial plasma that will save lives and fill every blood bank in the world.
I mean, there's a really
are the great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great way for him to sort of atone and you know, to put his mind to good use. So
the great thing is, like, when you talk about inventions, though, Peter is inventing a thing to try and penetrate the rhino's armor, you know?
Rhino hide ripper.
But, hang on, what does he say that he can use it for? I can't see it now. He talks about...
It has plenty of practical applications. I don't think he ever actually gets to what else it would be
good for. That's
right,
he didn't, yeah. But it's like, Uatu's invented light grenades and Peter and UV light sticks, and he's like, I should have thought of some of this stuff. And it's like, you know, you've got a gun that shoots crosses of light or something.
Yeah.
And it's like, this has no practical application except monster hunting.
Yeah.
Let this kid in here.
It's brilliant.
Supernatural monster hunting.
But
oh, I should have picked this one up, man.
Yeah,
this is up my alley.
Yeah, it's
there and get it. Point one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... isn't there a... Yeah, and Peter makes, of course, the obligatory Twilight joke. Where it's like,
sparkly vampires. Yeah.
You have to get it together. This looks bad. People like vampires that sparkle now. Oh. But there's a, you know, but again, there's a good moment here. Even later on that page, and Peter decks him out, and he's like, the blood bank is closed.
The blood bank is closed.
It's closed.
Did you really say that? Everyone's a crit.
That's great. So, I mean, it's perfectly good. There's a nice little twist at the end, too.
Reveal at the end that we're not going to mention.
So we'll leave that for your imagination.
I mean, I'd already figured out what it was before I turned the page. There was no chance, but it's like, that is... it's not a dangling plot thread, but in the nature of stories that are told with the character... does demand more resolution than the last story this particular surprise end character featured in, and we're coming back around to that.
Yeah. So here's my question, though, and like I said, I mean, the long and the short of it is this is a good issue. You know, it's at least as good as some of the other stuff. It's maybe not as heavy, or, I mean, heavy in terms of dense, maybe as some of the other issues that have been going on. Obviously, it's sort of, you know, it's a point one, so it's a contained story. But my question... to my panel is this a good point one? I mean, again, if we're going back and saying that the purpose of a point
it's
one...
It's perfect since I didn't read it.
...is to be a jumping... yeah. But if the purpose of the point one is to be a jumping on point, how good is this compared to everything else that's been going on to Spider-Man as a jumping on point?
Well, it's no different than everything else that's been going on. It's certainly, I don't think, any more of a good jumping on point than, say... the first issue of the Doctor Who two-parter was. In fact, I would say it's probably not as good a jumping on point as that was, save for the fact that that wasn't a complete story in one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously this is scripted now with Uatu as our POV character at the very start, as an in to Spider-Man's world for anybody new coming in. So we learn all these things through him, and we're gradually led into Spider-Man's world, and it's constructed in such a way to do that. But yeah, I mean, we never get the beautifully simple exposition that the Doctor Who story, I keep calling it the Doctor Who two-parter, that it gave us the nature of...
I think Dan was a proof. I think
of the we got the whole introduction to what Horizon's about and how everything works, you know. But this doesn't rely on any previous knowledge that anybody has, you know. I think anybody could pretty much pick it up and read this. I saw Dan saw a tweet. He tweeted, for every person that he's seen asking why this needed to be a point one issue, and you know, I can see that's a valid query. It is part of the ongoing story and everything. Why is it a point one? He's saying that, you know, for every person he's seen asking that, someone else has said they picked it up because it was a point one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because like I was telling JD, it felt like the next issue of Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah. It didn't feel like a point
this,
one at all.
Yeah, this is resolving a question that's been with us for over a year now. You know, I mean, the one thing that it does that does not, artistically, it doesn't lead you in for the regular look of ongoing Spider-Man. This is Matthew Clark is on the art with this one, and he is not following in any way the sort of artistic style laid down by Ramos or Caselli or... who's the third artist?
Mm.
Whoever they are, they haven't done anything on Spidey in ages. Yeah. So it doesn't really count. I mean, Ramos did all of Spider Island, and Caselli did the prologue and the epilogue, and Ramos did the Doctor Who two-parter as well, so... What was the... I hear an ad.
Yeah, I don't know where that's coming from.
I hear it too.
Nicole?
Okay, it's gone. Okay. I don't know where it was, but it's gone now. So, okay, sorry.
God, is that you? Are you talking to me?
I was on mute, so I don't think it came through me.
Okay.
Cross there.
I've been having a coughing fit, so I've been on mute. Sorry.
Oh,
you know, I love this this wall chart here where they try to figure out who it is, and they put in like the Jackal, Doctor Doom, MODOK, the Mad Thinker. Who else is in there? The Beast. What about Evil Beast? The Wizard.
What about
Evil
Beast?
And leave Zombie Stephen Albert. I know.
But I think we can eliminate Albert Einstein. That's a mistake,
man.
That's
a mistake, man. Albert Einstein's not real. Morbius, they've actually accounted for the possibility of Morbius, but it's Dr. Michael Morbius, vampire, no photo available. Because he's a vampire and they can't take photos of him.
Oh, that's cool.
A handwritten note.
Yeah.
I think my view of Morbius is perennially tainted by the Spider-Man cartoon, though.
Well, and how much? That's another question as well. I mean, you know, how much is this playing into that audience? Because,
well, I don't know.
I think he needs like suckers on his hand so he can bring blood to his hand. Totally.
Blood?
Yeah.
He didn't bring blood. He hungered for plasma.
That's what it was. Exactly.
I hungered for plasma.
Oh God! I hear it.
I just hear that little whiny voice in my head when it comes to Morbius. Hey, child, what have I done to Bloodline? It's going to consume me again. I hunger for plasma. No, I can't.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, like I said, why you wouldn't have picked it up if you're already reading Spider-Man, I don't know why you wouldn't. If you haven't, you should. I mean, it's maybe not... It's not any worse of a jumping on point than any, you know, other spot. There's other elements I would have liked to see, but I don't know if I can, like, actually, like, say what those are. Because I don't know if it's, you know... It's more of an essence thing. But it's very good, and like I said, it has answered a sort of question and then led into yet another one, so it's successful in that respect.
It's a resolution of a mystery that has been hanging over the book for over a year now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not without repercussions either, because, you know, Modell says at the very end, because Spider-Man is here, he's going to up security all across the lab because of what this is called, so that's just going to completely ruin Peter's setup.
Yeah, and it's
his own worst enemy.
Yep, and there again, I mean, there's where Peter has done something by letting, you know, doing something out of curiosity rather than, you know, necessity. He's sort of...
That seems like something that shouldn't be in a point one. That all of this seems like something like in a regular issue.
Yeah.
You know, like big stuff.
Yeah, I think you're going to be missing all.
There's anything wrong with putting big stuff in there? I think all of reads naturally.
I'm not knocking it for being in this. I'm just saying, like, if you're that type of person, it's like, oh, I'm not going
to
get that.
Yeah, I don't need the point one. Yeah, I think you're going to be.
I think the Spider-Man point ones have proven that you need them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say any point one that's written by the same author, you should automatically get. And I think most of the point ones on any series are, but there are a couple of odd ones which aren't, which really highlight the pointlessness of them. Like the Journey into Mystery one was an example of some of the worst. It was a perfectly fine issue, but it was by a different artist and a different writer, and it had nothing to do with what was going on, and it didn't really set the tone at all.
Yeah.
Or the Thor one, again, different writer, different artist, perfectly fine story. I speculated it was about reintroducing the Ray Gargoyle prior to Fear itself. I still think that's what they were going for, but had nothing to do with what was going on in Thor. There's a balance to be struck. I don't think...
A good job with
I think the Secret Avengers one. Yeah,
Secret Avengers was probably the new creative team.
Yeah, that was probably the best example of a point one that I've read, actually, I would say. The Spider-Man ones. I mean, the first Spider-Man one was basically Venom number zero, so that one... this one, you know, it doesn't get the balance for what you would want in a point one perfect. It doesn't... Well, it's a good issue, but it doesn't seem like the perfect balance. I think Nick Spencer's Secret Avengers point one was probably one of the best. You look at the Avengers one from about a year back, 12.1, which was a complete story in one, but it was set up for the Ultron War, which just hasn't been followed up on at all and won't be again until later this year. Actually, that issue is being reprinted for Free Comic Book Day. That is Marvel's Free Comic Book Day, this offering. They're pulling a DC year.
Oh,
yeah. Mm. Like DC reprinted one part of a second part of a 7-part story to tie into a film last year. Marvel is at least reprinting a single complete story to tie into a comics event that is coming up, which also happens to feature characters that are in a film this year. And DC is doing new stories this year.
Hmm.
Yay, DC!
So, flip it up. Nice.
Flippity-flabbity. The Free Comic Book Day issue to get, of course, is IDW's Transformers Regeneration 1 number 80.5.
Yes, that is going to be... That is definitely going to be the one to get. So, awesome. Cool. All right. Very good. So, pick up Spider-Man. Was it?
Always.
79.1. Yes, so you should pick up this point one. If you didn't, what the heck is wrong with you if you read Spider-Man?
Dude, you should just pick up anything that's amazing. Spider-Man.
I'm broke.
No.
The next issue is Spider-Man in space.
Yes!
How can you beat that?
With the human
space, no one can hear you thwip.
I know, and that's a two-part. So, you know, you can pick that up, you can read that, and then after that, that's the ends of the earth.
Dude, I hope, what is it, Man Wolf is in it. He's space-like. He needs to be in that issue.
Sure.
Man
Wolf. Why not?
I mean, yeah, you know, I throw your expectations out the window because you never know what you can get.
Slott has. I think John Jameson would have last been seen under Slott's pen in his
She-Hulk. Well,
it would be nice to see how he was doing after divorcing She-Hulk.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah.
So cool. Very good. All right. I think we may be close. We may be okay on time, so, but alas, we must go then, because, you know, we're almost there. So, thank you for listening to the show. I will mention for our live audience that I will be featured tomorrow on the 100th episode of Superhero Time.
Is this whenever, the series ends and then they all start again with slightly different costumes, unlike a pirate theme?
Yeah, you should totally come back with a pirate costume when it starts back.
Yes, So, and this actually is going to be the end of Go Kyger, so we're on to Go Buster, I guess, after this. So, but it should be a lot of fun. This will be the first time that Superhero Time has ever been, one, on video, and two, live. So, so it's a big event for them. Some of those guys...
When is this again?
I think it's going to be starting around 8 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow night. So, So some of these guys, you know, I don't know that they've ever been seen on video, so it should be very exciting. So yes, so that'll be cool. That I'm actually really excited about doing that. So that should be a lot of fun. So you should check that out. Yeah.
If I wasn't at work, I will. If I'm not at work, I will.
Good, excellent. It'll be fun. It should be a lot of fun. Like I said, that show has a really decent following, and I think they actually passed us last month. Those bastards. But I know. Most unorthodox. But regardless. Anyway, so I know I gotta help. I gotta quit helping them out. I guess that's.
Mm. Yeah, you're creative.
Be what it is. Anyway,
it's the game factor.
So we've got that. not this week, but next Justice League Doom will come out. We may have a preview.
Is that Tuesday? Does that come out Tuesday?
It comes out on the 28th.
It is not. Yeah, so it's not this week, but the week after.
But we may
okay.
We may get a hold of a preview. So we may perhaps do like a preview review of that, because that's coming out as well. So good stuff. All right. Well, crew, thank you so much. Good show. Lots of fun. I had fun.
It was great. I had fun.
I had fun watching Chris McFeely's Circle. Hopefully we won't.
We just Van Helsing to that show.
I know. Reload, no. The blood bank is closed.
There's so many good comics that came out this week. That's what sucks.
There were.
It made up for the last 2 weeks. What the world?
It was a nice consolidation. The Venom, I'll mention real quick, the Venom Circle of Four is going on this month. It's really good. Everybody died this week, so go figure that out. So we'll see what happens next. But anyway, all right. Well, again, thanks so much for listening. Go check us out. Follow us on Twitter at FanboyVS. So we usually live tweet during the show, and you can tweet us back and ask questions and do all that kind of cool stuff. So anyway, all right. Well, thanks so much, and please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.